common sort of rally on the 23rd, only this time it's the poor people trying to take back the town from the police and the merchants and the politicians who have taken it away from us. And we can also discuss what happened last week. The Board of Supervisors had its camp hearing. I guess it was on Thursday morning. That's the program to fund helicopters to swoop low over buildings and farms in search of the dreaded marijuana. Many eloquent speakers opposed that. Many eloquent speakers attacked it. In the end, the Board of Supervisors cut back the hours to half, as you know, but gave the sheriff the camp money he wants, supposedly reining him in and also mandating meetings between the sheriff and opposition groups like the Adios Camp group, led by Theodore Akiri and others, who so commendably brought forth so many people. I had a long speech I was going to give, and unfortunately I became the first speaker to be turned away from the mic by Supervisor Marty Wormhout. It was thoroughly her discretion. She had the complete option to extend the speaking time to allow me and four or five other people to finish. She chose not to do that. And I chose not to protest it, and I gave a speech later when no one was there other than the Board of Supervisors. And I'm probably going to repeat that speech if we have time before the end of the show, because I think it's an important speech. It talks about Jane Kaiser, not by name, though, because Jane didn't want to be mentioned at the Board of Supes. Jane was the elderly, she's not elderly yet, she's in her 50s, but she's, you know, she's up there, a medical marijuana patient who got bushwhacked by Deputy Steve Fitzgerald, the older man at the metal detector, the county courthouse. And she was, you know, pulled to the floor, pain compliance hold, manhandled, and then given three misdemeanors. And then she was given a similar misdemeanor, her medicine and her car taken away from her a month later. So she's been given the business by a department that supposedly is operating under the law, which is now Proposition 215, not to mention our local ordinance, our local advisory vote of several years ago, showing that more than 75% of the county favors use of medical marijuana for those who need it. And Tracy has stalled the negotiations. He hasn't called back, and in negotiations with the attorney for the Cannabis Club. So anybody who comes into that courthouse who the sheriff search and find medical marijuana on is subject to the same kind of harassment. And Jane pled guilty to one of those charges to avoid the grueling ordeal of going back to court again and again and fighting this matter in court. I urged her to fight it, but hey, it really is an individual matter. And there was talk of members of different cannabis clubs standing in line the day of Jane's trial and supporting her by each carrying their medical marijuana through the metal detector, which I think is a great idea and doesn't require a trial. All it requires is a little organization and some resolution, because until the day comes when the sheriff's department is forced to back down on this, everyone is going to be afraid. Not just at metal detectors, but everywhere around the county where they have to deal with deputies who want to make an issue out of small amounts of medical marijuana, whatever the law says. The deputies are showing that they don't have to pay attention to the law. They can do what they want. And along that same line, we had an interesting case on Friday in Judge Kelly's court. I haven't really been able to make a lot of clarity of what went on, but had to do with the freedom fighter and civil rights activist Richard Quigley, who has been a supporter of the homeless people. He's been a supporter, essentially just defending his own right to be able to survive in the county without harassment from the police. And he's been apparently targeted by a Sergeant Devereaux of the Sheriff's Department because of Quigley's determination that Devereaux had painted his own police parking spot at the Aptos Shopping Center in, I guess it's Rancho Del Mar, in violation of the law. I mean, he can paint all he wants, I guess, but to claim that other people can't use that spot is wrong. And you might call this a petty dispute. But again, it's an example of sheriffs and police officers taking action to try to extend their privileges where it is inappropriate for them to do so. They are servants, not masters, we hope, of the public. And Quigley, as a consequence of parking in Devereaux's spot and beating the tickets in court, saying the sheriff can't decide to sort of without an act of the local board of supervisors or a lawful justification to paint himself a special parking place. Devereaux, unilaterally and on his own, with a band of sort of rogue cops, has gone after Quigley and other friends of Quigley, who actually didn't really know what was going on until they discovered themselves being followed in police cars, pulled over, ticketed, jacked up generally because of their associations with Richard Quigley. And the whole matter was up before a discovery motion hearing in Judge Kelly's court on Friday to get information, which they were cross-examining the cops involved in these stops. On what basis, what's the probable cause or reasonable suspicion under which you stopped Laura, I guess it's Soderman, was one of Quigley's friends. I'm going to have an update on more of this later, and I'll even have an interview with Quigley, hopefully. In fact, let's see if we can find that interview now. Vexatious litigant Richard Quigley. Hi there, vexing Richard.
That's something.
So what's happening? Let me just briefly recap. You have been engaging in your usual freedom struggles against sheriff's, should we say, weird privileges and harassment of the youth out at the Del Monte Shopping Center in Aptos?
Rancho Del Mar.
Aha, thank you. And you recently sort of challenged the parking privileges of a sheriff who sort of painted his own spot. The sheriff became angry and apparently began jacking up you and your friends.
Yep.
And, well, what's the latest on all that?
Well, on Friday, all but the most recent of the Quigley-related cases, I just love that phrase, the Quigley-related cases are going to be heard in Judge Kelly's courtroom at 1:30 p.m.
Wow, so that's, by the time this airs, that will already have happened, and we can probably do an update to this update.
Okay. Yeah, there's some substantial matters going to be on the table. It should be, at the very least, an interesting day for me, and it may very well be for jurisprudence overall. I have no idea.
So, in other words, how many people would you say have suffered harassment from, I guess it's Sheriff Devereaux and his associates?
That's Devereaux and his sheriff's office have moved into Aptos. There have been at least three arrests that never would have happened were he not there. Two of them most assuredly false, and one of them most assuredly unnecessary. Mm-hmm. There has been one young woman lose her job because of his insistence that Safeway discharge her because she has a less than civic attitude. In other words, she's not ready to drop to her knees and blow the first cop that comes up and says, "Blow me."
Mm-hmm. This is the same woman who was herself sexually assaulted by a highway patrol officer for observing a smog check stop.
That was last August.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, that same girl. And they are actually using that as part of their reasoning and pointing that she's not a good employee for Safeway because she was arrested in this smog check thing. You know, the whole thing is really convoluted, but it was pushed by Devereaux, as I get the facts now. He was the one that pushed real hard for Safeway to discharge her because, you know, she wasn't wanting to shut up and get in line bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So she's right now, she's not working.
Wow. Has this weakened her resolve? She what's happening with her?
Well, is she holding her mud? Yeah. Is she doing it a lot more tearfully than she'd have to? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's...
So it's Devereaux's campaign is taking its toll on people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's unconscionable that this son of a bitch is allowed to do what he's doing. I'm hoping that, in fact, it is the mission on Friday to literally take him out as an officer. I mean,
hasn't Judge Kelly, however, endlessly delayed this whole process?
No, not really so much Kelly as the whole situation with the fact that there are these are all Quigley-related matters. What happened was is that the district attorney who is assigned to Kelly's court, our former assembly candidate, Lily Cervantes,
uh-huh,
had an extreme amount of trouble in maintaining her decorum in the courtroom because she was dealing with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I seemed to be a real problem for her. So what they did was first they tried to get everything shuttled out at Kelly's court and stick it over in Watsonville, but they couldn't leave it there because Judge Morris could not hear the cases because her husband's skiing buddies with Devereaux, so it came back. And so it's back at Kelly's court because he does all this stuff. And Lily couldn't hold up. She just absolutely was emotionally not strong enough to deal with me as as one of the defendants and as an overseer of the other cases, you know, kind of being in there as a support factor for these other Quigley-related matters.
Well, you have always taken an independent and rather forceful view of the citizens' rights in local courts, right?
Well, I think that's probably the mildest way it could be put. Yeah, I am the belligerent claimant that is discussed in United States versus Johnson.
However, you deny being a vexatious litigant. Is that correct? Can you explain to us what a vexatious litigant is and what the significance is that you've recently been charged with this by the county council?
Well, a vexatious litigant is usually when they decide to move to have somebody deemed a vexatious litigant, it's when they're suing their neighbors for $100,000 because they won't make their dog stop crapping in the yard, or a tree is so large that it throws shade in the yard for 5 or 6 hours a day. It's people that sue their neighbors as a means of the old neighborhood feud stuff.
Uh-huh.
In my case, what they're doing is they are using actions that I've filed in order to restore or regain my rights under the law against the state. And, of course, those have all been systematically denied by the same guy that's going to make the determination whether or not I'm a vexatious litigant, and that's old Sam S.S. Stevens.
Uh-huh.
Or S.S. Stevens. And he's a pretty bad boy. And I expect that the filing of the motion into his court pretty much gives them, they're going to win that one. I'm not even going to put much of a fight up because there's no point.
Now, I haven't read about your case in the Sentinel lately, but occasionally you were referred to in the old days on radio station KSCO. Are you getting any coverage through any media anywhere other than, of course, my own esteemed show here on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
No, as a matter of fact, you're it. In fact, I avoid those guys. The newspaper doesn't get it, and even if they did get it, they're totally in favor of the direction that the state has taken.
But wasn't Dave Allen, a conservative commentator on KSU, also harassed by the Highway Patrol? And
he ran out of guts before he ran out of reasons to pitch a bitch.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. He was convicted of a 148, which never should have been put on him, and he should have appealed it and didn't. And Dave's kind of an interesting character. I got a lot of respect for Dave. He's done a lot of good, but when push comes to shove, Dave has proven himself to be one that's not prepared to go the distance.
Uh-huh.
And it's just as well in this freedom-fighting business. If you're not prepared to go the distance, don't get into the fight, because all you do is leave a trail of bad decisions that the next guy has to climb over.
Right.
So we try to recommend to people that if they're not committed to go the distance.
Well, back to the vexatious litigant. Sorry for interrupting you there. What's the significance of this attempt to brand you with this label, and will it stick? And if it does, what penalties accrue, and how are you going to fight it?
Well, a vexatious litigant, once you're labeled vexatious litigant, you can only move into the courts with permission of the courts, except and unless you hire an attorney. Anybody that has dealt with the government and their tyranny, what they run into when you complain about what they do is, well, if you don't like it, hire a lawyer and sue. And so when they take away your ability to sue and represent yourself, sue as a pro per litigant, what they do is they enforce that part about hiring an attorney.
It's sort of an attorney's welfare bill, eh?
Well, certainly a job security bill. I mean, it definitely, as long as the government is stomping on people's rights and insisting that the only way that they can secure their rights is through litigation, and then to insist that the only litigation you can file is through an attorney, then it certainly sets things up so that if you're going to get your rights, you have to employ an attorney, which completes the little make-work project. So then they just simply go around and violate your rights, and then you have to go hire an attorney if you have the money, and if you don't have the attorney, then they just simply take your rights. So what they're doing is they're stripping me of the last of my rights.
You think they will be successful in doing this?
Oh, yeah, I told you. It's going into Stevens Court. I can tell you right now before the next thing is heard. On the 17th of July, 1997, I will be deemed by Judge Stevens a vexatious litigant, and it wouldn't matter if they didn't have any reason for it at all. He has never shown me any tendency whatever to either regard people's rights under the law or to regard precedent decision and statutory language and all the rest. He's just his own little one-man guy.
Now, do you have any recourse? Can you appeal this?
Well, I could probably, and it all depends on whether or not I decide that it's worth it. Is it possible for me to move into federal court? Is this a golden opportunity, in a sense, for me to move into federal court and show that the history of defeats in the court have been at the hands of this tyrant Stevens? And can I name him in an action into the federal court? And can all of the issues of his determinations in the past be brought forward now where they had long since died because of a statute of limitations, etc.? And can I play You Bet Your House for the dumbass bastard? Sure. Yeah, I can do that.
But is it worth your time and energy?
Well, that's that. And, of course, you know, when you walk into the federal court fighting a vexatious litigant finding by another court, you have that stigma coming in so that you're going to be treated with less than full respect when you get there. So it's kind of it's one of those things where I look at it and say, nah, I really don't care. All that any freedom fighter can do, you know, anybody that believes that they're going to get a justice in the courts just simply doesn't understand the system.
Right, but people are more likely to get justice at some level and to spread the desire for justice if they're not barred from arguing their own cases, right?
Well, you don't get, if you're using an attorney, you certainly don't get to argue the points of law that have to do with the Constitution, because your lawyer is stuck with that license that they have. You know, being a member of the bar and being able to practice law at the will of the state means that if you screw up and do anything that's disruptive to their little system, then they simply take away your ticket. In essence, what they're doing is disbarring me from representing myself. So that what is happening to me would happen to any lawyer that attempted to represent my freedom issues and my constitutional issues from my point of view.
What's the substantive grounds on which they're going to claim you are a vexatious litigant?
Well, the fact that I have gone into court and sought relief and been denied. And I continue to come back to the court to seek relief as if there's some other avenue.
And how many times has this happened in the last decade?
Since 1990, I believe they're showing 6 cases. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, I don't know what all of them are. I do know that one of them was filed. I never expected it to win. There's at least one, maybe 2 of them, and I'll have to go down and review the files. But there's one in here where I was seeking a restraining order, for example, against Dave Ginocchio.
Who is?
Dave Ginocchio is one of the assistant district attorneys.
Uh-huh.
He's one of our Danner's fair-haired boys. In fact, I suspect that he's got a lot to do with these cases being brought against these people that are friends of mine. Dave's a real twisted sister.
And would that we had more time to hear about Richard Quigley's ongoing fight. He's very articulate. He's very outspoken. Hey, next time, perhaps. We do have a final interview with Ted Wood, who is the fellow who spoke to the San Jose City Council on behalf of the Human Rights Defense Committee. He is so well spoken that I just had to put in a bit of his interview. Here he is on the issue of, on a number of issues, but we'll let him speak for himself.
Talking to, who am I talking to?
This is Gary Wood of San Jose. I belong to a group called the Human Rights Defense Committee.
Now, Gary, we've actually spoken with Pat Circle, and I guess we talked to a couple of other folks as well, but maybe you can tell us, give us the inside story about what happened night before last, at San Jose City Council. You went in and actually, dealt with a lion in her lair, so to speak.
We go deal with the lion in the lair quite a bit. The background, of course, is that we are a group that deals mainly with untold police violence directed at civilians, unwarranted police violence. And we came into existence because of a guy named Gustavo Solomace that got shot in the back of the head, an unarmed Latino. Most of our work's been deadly force, but of course we respond to any violence. Since early spring, the street kids of San Jose, these are kids that, mostly homeless kids, that basically just hang out in downtown San Jose, have been coming to us with complaints of increased, and I mean these are kids that know about police harassment, about increased intimidation, and an intimidation of a different caliber than they were used to. We're a bunch of old farts, so at first we said, yeah, but you guys are, you know, aggressive panhandlers. You got to expect some police come back, and you guys pee in doorways, and so the businessmen aren't going to like you, and they're going to call the police on you. You eat and run out of restaurants. The restaurants don't like you. They're going to call the police on you, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth of the matter is, and I don't think we were very helpful the first couple that came to us. Then all of a sudden, a pattern started showing. And it was really a clear pattern. Same time they were complaining to that, the San Jose City Council were passing a whole series of anti-cruising laws, key to the youth. Curfew law just finished its one-year term, key to the youth. And also these laws of no sit, no lie ordinance in San Jose, first time, and that's just coming in the next month. So, you know, there were several patterns going on here. So all of a sudden, it took us a little while to put it all together, but when we finally did put it together, we became convinced that the police were targeting these homeless youth, not for their actions, but for who they are. That's a real big difference. I mean, police are supposed to act aggressively against certain types of actions, illegal actions, but not against type of people. And these police were clearly targeting homeless youth. One of the big complaints that was offered, an example, and actually all it was just an example, was that these street kids had formed a drum circle in a little used park next to the Children's Discovery Museum at the far end of the park, and they kind of started gathering there to do drumming, to make music. This had nothing to do with street gangs. This had nothing to do with drugs. This had to do with music. I mean, when they went there to make music, and it got big. You know, it went from a few drums to about 20 drums would appear, and it'd go from a few people to, I've heard numbers of 70 to 100 kids showing up. And so it became a real important thing in their culture. The police naturally didn't like this, and they started going in. Now, remember, this is the poorest of the poor. These are homeless kids. And they started to pass out $120 citations, threatened to throw them in jail for violating the no-sit, no-lie ordinance. Started pushing them around, physically breaking up the drum circles.
Well, Gary, let me interrupt you for a moment.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, because you're doing a great narrative here, and I want to hear more. They were actually, you know what charges they were putting on these kids, because the sit-lie law is not supposed to...
Absolutely, it's not supposed to be in effect. They were lying. They were saying they're going to arrest them for it, but they never, according to the own city council, they're supposed to be first a warning, they can be cited, and it's just a citation. It's never an arrest kind of an offense type of thing. It shouldn't be an arrest type of thing.
Well, actually, it's not supposed to happen, at least in St. James Park. That's the first thing.
It's not supposed to happen in any city park. It was supposed to... The police were blowing smoke.
Right, and also, of course, it is true that the thing about this ordinance is pretty nasty. I've been looking at sit-lie laws in different cities, including Palo Alto and Santa Barbara, as well as Santa Monica, which recently passed these anti-homeless sit-lie laws, is that San Jose covers the largest area, 66 square blocks, and is actually a misdemeanor on the first offense. So if they do choose to cite you, that's up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine and a
amazing, $1,000 fine to the poorest of the poor, 6 months in jail. It's wonderful. And the idea of criminalizing the youth, I mean, these are kids. I mean, they should be knocking themselves to keep, these are what they term at-risk kids. They should be knocking themselves to keep them out of the system. Not
in Santa Cruz, there's a curfew coming up again probably in a couple of weeks in the city. We've got a county curfew modeled after San Jose's curfew for young people. But the question is always for me, where do homeless youth get spent? If they're, you know, if you can't call their parents because they're homeless. So what happens to homeless youth when they get cited and harassed under this curfew?
What we're talking about is a short-sighted depression answer to social problems. But you have your police run all the social problems out of town, and then they're not your problems anymore. They're the next town's problems.
So they actually tell young kids to get out of town?
The kids that were saying they have a right to make music, they say, yes, you can. Matter of fact, we encourage it. We'll tell you where the drum circle can form. Go to San Jose State campus and play it on San Jose State University's campus. Because, see, the San Jose PD does not control that campus. The campus has its own police force.
that's what they're doing, Dan. And the kids are being, the pinball machine being bounced around the system. And again, clearly that is what's happening. The idea, but again, so naturally, at this point, they did have our attention. And we started buying, they asked us to be their spokesman, so we did. And so what we did is we sent a beautifully, reasoned, respectful letter to the mayor. We sent a letter to five other members of the city council that we thought might be sympathetic, or at least were players in the thing. One was to Pandori, who had sponsored the No Sit, No Lie. They didn't think he'd be sympathetic, but he was a player in this discussion, and so we wanted him in the discussion. We sent letters to the chief of police, naturally, asking him to join the discussion. We sent letters to the San Jose Youth Commission, to their chair, which is a guy named Michael Amaral. And we sent these letters to all these people.
And what did you get back in return?
2 weeks went by. We got nothing back in return.
Deafening silence.
Deafening silence is exactly what we received from all of these, from all of the parties. Now, that's not entirely true. We also sent letters to Bill Wilson Center for the Homeless in Santa Clara. They responded. We sent it to the Emergency Housing Consortium in San Jose. They responded and said they wanted to be part of the discussion. We sent it to the Human Relations Commission of Santa Clara County, Jim McEntee. He responded, said he wanted to be part of the discussion. We got some, but no city in it. Nobody from San Jose. They were the main parties.
Are the people primarily responsible for repressing these?
Absolutely. The city was absolutely silent. So we figured we needed to find the appropriate way to get their attention. And the obvious answer was that the drum circle was cited more than once as an example of the increased harassment by the San Jose PD. We decided to resurrect the drum circle, and we decided to resurrect it. The night, the San Jose City Council has two night meetings, and so we did it on the last Tuesday's meeting. We resurrected the drum circle, and it was a wonderful event. The beautiful thing about the city of San Jose's giant office building is that it's a wonderful acoustic place. It's like a semicircle that is a backdrop and gives wonderful acoustic background for drummers. All the drummers appreciated it. We had about, now again, by the way, San Jose PD was real effective, so we only had about a week to put this together, and we really hit the streets of San Jose looking for the street kids, and they used to be very thick. Now they're really gun-shy, and a lot of them, we encountered a lot of them. I mean, it's not like there aren't a lot of homeless kids in San Jose, but a lot of them were real gun shy about coming face to face with the police. They were actually very intimidated by them. The police have been very effective, but we got enough of them. I mean, we ended up with about 65 people at this drum circle. We ended up with about 15 legitimate drums, conga drums to bongos, a bunch of paint cans and other makeshift drums, and it was wonderful, beautiful music these kids played throughout the city council meeting. I was inside the meeting presenting and telling them why why the peasants are storming the castle gates. And you could hear the drum beat going throughout the whole city council. It was a wonderful event. Music. It was absolutely music. I mean, the city council may wonder who the drum was tolling for. It was tolling for them, and there was no doubt about it. They had, not only that, but there's another group in San Jose that had kind of disbanded and just started together, and they just came together for this event, and it's Food Not Bounds. Now, there's branches all over. The San Jose branch had kind of died out, had petered out, and they came back in force. And they put on a beautiful food for the homeless kids. And, I mean, it was a real nice spread. And the kids really appreciated it. So we had food, we had music, and we were protesting. And it was
Gary Wood of the Human Rights Defense Committee. Apparently, after the demonstration, Council Member Manny Diaz actually wanted to talk to them. So the protest had its impact. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This has been Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, 2 hours every Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning. You call 423-4833. We'll put you on the air if you've got something to say about something we've said or something you think we should have said. Thanks for being with us. Join us again next week. We'll have more. We have endless interviews. We wish we could put them all on. We can't. We put on what we can, and hey, we've reached the end of our hour, so we got to go. But you can join folks organizing for the July 4th rally. Join us at 8 o'clock at Laurel Park or Loudon Nelson Center Park to see if we can do what San Jose is doing, to organize. Fight back. Fight back also at City Council. That's June 24th, Tuesday, 7 o'clock. Next week, 11 o'clock, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Tune in again, 96.3 FM.